Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at Africa's war on corruption. What has been the impact of public sector corruption across the continent, and what will it take to win the fight against corruption? That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry, sitting in for Shaka Sali. Today we're discussing the fight against corruption in Africa. Can Africa win? Now, countries in sub-Saharan Africa continue to appear at the bottom of Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index, which tracks corruption in 180 countries. This year, during the United Nations General Assembly in New York, several African leaders took the fight against corruption to the world body. VOA's Paul Dio reports.
Tackling corruption remains an uphill battle for most African countries. Transparency International, a leading global watchdog on corruption, says African nations are performing very poorly, even though some of the continent's leaders are leading the fight against corruption. For example, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has taken steps to fight corruption. Speaking at the UN General Assembly, Buhari called for greater cooperation between African countries and to fight the illicit flow of funds across international boundaries.
The fight against corruption, therefore, involves us all. It is in our collective interest to cooperate in tracking illicit financial flows, investigate and prosecute corrupt individuals and entities, and repatriate such funds to their countries of origin.
In Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta is cracking a whip on corruption, but critics say he has been slow to pursue top government officials until recently, when he asked all civil servants, public procurement officers and accounting officers to undergo a lifestyle audit. Now President Kenyatta has taken his fight to the United Nations.
The present system of transferring and laundering illicit capital is enabling corrupt networks all over the world to illegally acquire in one country while being welcomed with open arms as investors in another. It has become clear to citizens all over the world that what is enabling the illegal and illicit conduct of corrupt individuals and companies is globalized financial and legal systems.
Angolan president has taken on corruption more directly than any of the country's previous administrations, most notably with the arrest of José Filimino, the son of former President José Eduardo dos Santos, over illegal transfer of $500 million from state funds to a holding account in Britain. José Filimino is being detained on allegations of money laundering, embezzlement, and fraud. High-level corruption scandals have also tainted the administration of Edgar Lungu of Zambia. The president fired a senior government official after the British government suspended aid payments to the country amid allegations of corruptions of up to $4.7 million in aid payments that may have been embezzled. Finland, Sweden, and Ireland have also suspended aid to Zambia, pending the outcome of the far-reaching investigation. Still in Southern Africa, Emmerson Mnangagwa, the new president of Zimbabwe, speaking to a diaspora audience in New York, he vowed to fight corruption.
Corruption. Pasi nayo! We will fight corruption.
In Liberia, containers full of newly minted currency worth more than $100 million have gone missing. The cash is said to have been shipped from Sweden late last year in the midst of Liberia's elections to choose a successor to President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. The disappearance has caused public outrage in a nation that has long been dogged by corruption scandals. South Sudan remains at the bottom of the Corruption Perception Index. Corrupt South Sudanese officials are alleged taking illicit funds derived from the 4.5-year civil war and investing it in Uganda and Kenya. A report released by the US-based Enough Project last year indicated that several South Sudanese leaders have invested ill-gotten wealth in neighboring countries. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Well, joining us now in the studio today is Arikana Chihombori Kwao, ambassador of the Africa Union to the United States. Now, joining us live via Skype from Berlin, Germany, is Paul Banoba, Africa Regional Advisor for Transparency International, and from Surrey, Britain, Irungu Houghton, Executive Director, Amnesty International, Kenya. A warm, Straight Talk Africa. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, first, I want to start here in studio with Ambassador Chambori. The Africa Union Assembly declared 2018 this year the year of anti-corruption. And, of course, the theme is winning the fight against corruption, a sustainable path to Africa's transformation. What does this really mean in practical ways?
Well, in practical ways, we realize that corruption is really hindering development in all African countries in general. But let's be very clear. If we're going to be talking about corruption in Africa, let's also understand that it's a two-part process. There's corruption within Africa itself, and then there's corruption coming from outside into Africa. Mm-hmm. So both issues must be addressed, but very differently. What I find disturbing is that as we try to address and talk about corruption in Africa, everybody seems to concentrate on internal issues and completely disregarding the biggest issue, which is corruption coming from outside and fueling what is already going on within the continent.
All right. Let me get your take, Paul, first in Berlin. I hope you listen to Ambassador Chihombori here saying that we need to look at both what's coming from outside and what is within the continent. As Transparency International, you prepare this statistics every year. What do you look at? Are you looking also at the impact of corruption from external kind of agencies or countries or organizations?
Thank you so much, Vincent. Yes, and thank you so much for having us on this, for hosting us here. A very important topic for us, certainly. I would agree, certainly, with Ambassador Chihombori that there are dimensions to corruption, in specifically the kind of corruption that she's talking about, that in terms of investments, we do have, as you heard from President Uhuru Kenyatta and also from President Buhari, that we do have international cooperation bringing the challenge of what we call investment turning out to be losses from the African side. So from that dimension, certainly there is two sides to it, and we need to look at both. In terms of the work that we do with regard to the statistics, Vincent, that you're talking about, there are quite a number of tools, but I think the most famous one which you're referring to right now is the Corruption Perceptions Index, which is looking at the public sectors internally, the public sectors in the country and the level to which they are perceived to be clean. So that is certainly looking at the country specifically. It's not looking at both dimensions.
Yes. And actually, I want to, before I go to Irungu, I want to just to mention the kind of perception, corruption perception index, the kind of statistics we have here. If we can have this up on the screen, so that we get a sense of what it means, the public sector corruption and how it impacts the continent. It says the continent ranks lowest among global regions in the Corruption Perception Index, and this is the Transparency International's ranking of 180 countries by their perceived levels of public sector corruption. Roughly 43% of Africans are living in poverty, but at the same time, over $50 billion worth of stolen assets flow out of Africa every year. Misappropriated funds account for 25% loss of development resources in Africa. Of course, we have some hope there because it says Botswana, Seychelles, Cape Verde, Rwanda, and Namibia are right now scoring much better on the index compared even to some countries in Europe, including Italy, Spain, Greece, and Hungary. So there's a grim picture there. A lot of money being shipped out of Africa. Here we're talking about billions, while so many are living in squalor. If now I may go to Surrey in Britain, Irungu, I want to bring Irungu in here. You probably had those numbers and the reality on the ground, according to Transparency International, and then the comments from Ambassador Echomori Kwao. What do you say in terms of the responsibility of the Africans themselves, as opposed to the those who enable corruption from outside of the continent?
Thank you, Vincent. I think from Amnesty's perspective, we really see corruption through two filters. The first is that wherever you have a corrupt state, there will be neglect of essential services to health, education. They will also be neglected criminal justice system, and the police will not have the tools that they require to keep all of us safe. The second lens is really through many, many whistleblowers, people who risk their lives to expose and to investigate corruption. Many of those are human rights defenders, and they're essentially driven by the idea that no citizen should be left in the fear of want in terms of their basic social services, nor should they really be frightened that they will be harmed in any way. So I think for us, these two filters is how we would look at corruption. And I think, you know, in the context, if you look at the news coming out of Africa at the moment, something like 40 South African politicians or political leaders have been assassinated in the last year for fighting corruption. We've seen horrific cases of killings in Kenya associated with two county governors, the governors of Migori and Garissa. So in many ways, there is a fierce battle, really, for the conscience of the continent. And I think Transparency International helps us to think through this probably best when they, if you look at the bottom five most corrupt states on that index, they're characterized by no public services, child labor, huge inequalities, conflict and violence. Many of them don't have a free press, nor do they have civil society organizations. And in many ways, they are failed states. So the presence of corruption is fundamentally one of the blocks on human rights and democracy across Africa.
Yes. Now, Ambassador, if you look at, the gentlemen have said quite a number of things here, but also you mentioned something about looking at it from the external forces. But how about the extent to which African countries can deliberately fight against corruption? And then the other issues can be taken care of. Do we see real efforts on the ground where a government has a zero tolerance to corruption and therefore is doing the very best it can, regardless of what is coming from outside?
I can honestly tell you, based on the deliberations, I've been privileged to be present when the African heads of states were talking about corruption. Yes, there is zero tolerance from the AU level and all the way down to the individual states.
Yeah.
That was one of the pivotal topics that we discussed.
But the thing is, in most of the countries, the people are actually considered the most corrupt are the leaders themselves. In fact, the closer you are to the top, the more corrupt you are, the more you are the beneficiary. And in our report, we just saw that, for example, in Angola, the former president's family members have been accused of corruption. In some of the sitting president's cases, they're accused to be the ones who are stealing their government's money and the family members and their cronies. How can you fight corruption if you're the person who is actually the main culprit?
Let me start by saying, I'm going to step back outside a little bit. Mm-hmm. I take offense in having this being highlighted as a uniquely African issue. It is an issue around the world. We have leaders who are corrupt around the world.
Yeah.
So just because we have a few leaders in Africa who may not be doing well by their people, let's not blanket all of Africa as a continent with leaders who are corrupt.
Definitely.
That is not correct.
Definitely not.
So,
definitely not every leader is corrupt.
Right, so
but we're saying that their leaders who, in their countries, they're the ones who are actually accused of amassing wealth, stealing from the citizens, stealing public funds and getting extremely wealthy along with their family members and their close friends. It is a fact, isn't it?
We do have issues in some countries.
Yes.
But what I can tell you from the AU level, keep in mind, the African Union is like any other family. We have the schizophrenic aunt, the alcoholic uncle.
Yeah.
We recognize who they are. We try to work with them. We do the best we can to continue to get everybody to be on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Now, it is a challenge. which is why we have made this year the anti-corruption year.
And we will talk a little bit more about that, but I think the most critical issue is the extent to which people are held accountable. There's corruption all over the world, but to what extent are people being held accountable for their actions? But we'll do that after the break. Before pausing for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Corruption. And we'll air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back. We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
Could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Well, speaking to VOA, Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio addressed the issue of corruption in his country. Let's listen.
Corruption, I have said, is a threat to national security. We are reeling out of a civil war that lasted for 11 years in that country. We cannot continue to commit the same mistakes that were committed by our predecessors. We have to check corruption.
Well, welcome back. I want to take viewers back to Berlin now. Paul, of course, every time you hear that, mostly African leaders, actually, when they speak about corruption, there's always a tendency, and I've interviewed so many politicians, there is a tendency to say, of course, there's corruption in other parts of the world. There's corruption in the United States. There's corruption in Europe. There's corruption in Asia. But is that a good enough kind of argument in terms of the fight against corruption?
Well, my short answer to that, Vincent, is I would not go that direction. I would not encourage that argument. But first, it's true. It's actually true, and we mentioned this at the beginning of the show, that you highlighted five countries, in fact, six countries that scored in Africa above some of the OECD countries. So you had on your list Seychelles, Mauritius, Rwanda, Cape Verde, and it's true that there are countries in Europe, in the US, elsewhere that you see that have a corruption problem that on the index appears even bigger than some African countries. So it's true. However, I wanted to borrow what Ambassador Chiombori has now termed as the African family, the African Union as a family. So if the idea is to fight against corruption, and if it's a family fighting a problem that is considered a common problem that they want to get rid of, or let's get this out of our family, I think the idea then would be to look internally, to reinforce internal measures to ensure that the family is in order and is protected, and anybody coming in with anything that is not desirable, we do have the mechanisms to address it. So that would be the approach, I would say, especially for this year against corruption, that would look internally and take measures. And then whatever it is that is external, we look into collaboration and international partnerships to address the problem.
Irungu, your take on that, and also the fact that in so many of this, the number of countries we mentioned where there's corruption, of course, we know that... The people who are in positions of power enjoy access to all the goodies. And you come from Kenya. You probably are familiar with people who joined politics just the other day, and suddenly they are millionaires. So where is that responsibility of and the countries of Africa, the African family, where you would expect them to come a little cleaner, be more honest and say, we are stealing from our own citizens. We need to stop this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the analogy of a family is probably misplaced in a couple of ways. I think it's much more complex than that. And I think the first response is that the primary focus has to be a national strategy to fight corruption. We know what works. There are 4 or 5 actions that are, you know, are effective in case of fighting even big graft cases. Thorough and uncompromised investigations by, national intelligence, by criminal investigation units. It's important that these units of government are independent of the executive, because in many cases they are used by the executive to cover up cases rather than to pursue them to their logical convictions. The second one is our banking laws and our banking sector need to be held accountable for violating transnational capital transfers. The third one really is that what we've seen in Kenya has been the use of lifestyle audits, and that these need to be not voluntary lifestyle audits, but they need to be compulsory and they need to be regular. And in cases where there are unexplained wealth, those assets, not just of the individual state officers, but their relatives, need to be seized and held until they can be explained. And I think the last one for us is in Amnesty has been really that there has to be protection for whistleblowers and human rights defenders to be able to do this work and to protect public resources and public land. I'm always struck by how dangerous it is for whistleblowers to act in the public interest. And their primary fear is not the cartels and the tenderpreneurs. It is the state itself. Mm-hmm.
Ambassador Chombori, the biggest frustration from many of the Africans I speak to is not that they do not recognize that there is corruption in other parts of the world, but they do say in most cases, nobody is ever held accountable. People have come from countries where they have seen the plunder of state wealth. They have seen people blatantly stealing, but there's no day they get arrested. There's no day they get sued and made to pay, either by going to prison and their wealth taken away. Yet in a place like the United States, we've seen people go to prison for even just attempting to solicit for a bribe. They never even got it, but they go to prison, 7 years, 10 years. So when African leaders are sitting in the African Union, do they discuss things like those? Like, how do we make sure we have institutions that can truly hold people accountable, including those of us in power?
I can honestly tell you the decision to make this year the anti-corruption year, it took all that into consideration. Mm-hmm. The African leaders being very realistic and having conversations with each other to say this is a serious problem and internally we need to address it. That is being done.
So are they discussing things like how do you make sure you create an institution that it cannot be influenced by the executive, for example, that cannot be intimidated by the powerful and mighty in government? I mean, because without that, then this theme, this year, is all just a slogan.
Again, once the head of state gets into an agreement from the African Union level, we're now counting and hoping that we will have a policy mechanism to police the heads of states. Every 6 months, twice a year, the heads of states are coming back and reporting on the progress that they have made in fighting corruption within their countries. But let me take you back a little bit. While we are busy talking about this corruption in terms of what the actual leaders are doing at different levels, let's also look at the environment in which they are operating from. Let's take, for example, the Francophone countries. When you look at the limitations which were set up by them signing the pact for the continuation of colonization back in 1958. When you look at the fact that none of these countries print their own money, and they're not allowed to, none of these countries, over 40%, almost 50% of their food is coming from outside. The countries, the contracts, private and public, in those countries, the French companies have first right of refusal. When you look at the fact that their own mineral assets, the oil discovered, yet to be discovered, the minerals discovered and yet to be discovered, France has the first right of refusal in order to sell those resources. When you look at all that, their own military is trained by France. France has a presence in those countries. They're completely controlled by France. When you look at the overall impact on those countries, what is being done, what is being stolen out of those countries by France? We're talking $500 billion in 1 year. I want a louder voice talking about that. We're talking about $50 billion in 1 year going out in terms of corruption. I'm also saying I want the loudest voices to talk about the $500 billion. Let me finish.
Yes, ma'am.
Because if this $500 was to stay in the continent, maybe we will have enough money to do more for the people. The Francophone countries are being left with about 15% of their reserves.
There are those, though, who have more money.
I'm saying, we're saying those have more money.
Yeah.
It's a case of who's got the larger crumb. Let me finish.
Yes,
who's got the larger crumb of the crumbs under the table?
Yeah.
That's all I'm trying to say. So we are busy fighting. because this is a very important issue for me. And we need to understand it as Africans for what it is. We are busy fighting over who got the larger crumb of the crumbs under the table. I am saying we should also take the bigger fight, which says I want the filet mignon on the table, I want the champagne and caviar on the table. Yes, the president got the larger crumb of the crumbs under the table. Let's take the conversation where it also needs to be and give that conversation the weight that it deserves.
How about this? As an example of a country where actually everybody could have a filet mignon on the table, I'm talking about Equatorial Guinea, which has the highest GDP per capita of any African country. Just 20 years ago, it was a poor country. It discovered oil and suddenly became a very wealthy country. Only 1 million citizens of that country. But the country's people are very poor. They are very poor except for the president and the family of the president. The son of the of that country's president was actually prosecuted in the United States for money laundering. The children of some of these people have billions of dollars. They have wealth that is invested in other countries. So how are you going to tell these people that their problem is because of France when actually they can see the children of their presidents gallivanting around the globe and enjoying the wealth of the nation, of the oil money?
Okay, I'm just saying we need to look at situation individually.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to dissect the different leaders and how much wealth their families have and put it out there, that's all nice and good. And your point is valid.
Because we're a family. It's a family.
Yes,
so
it is.
It's good to dissect and see where the problem is.
That is being done, which is why the presidents are being challenged to go through the process of self-examination. And under President Kagame, that process is being done. Those leaders who need more help, believe me, there are conversations behind the scenes that are taking place. Because we cannot talk about fighting the war against corruption when the obvious that needs to be dealt with is not being dealt with. At the African Union level, that conversation, those conversations that are needed, I can assure you they are taking place.
Let me go to Berlin. Paul, are you uplifted? Your spirit is uplifted by the actions of the African Union. Do you get the sense that indeed there is a spirited effort to root out corruption in as much as the country is also addressing external interference and corruption from outside?
Let's first split this into two, if you may. In terms of the corruption, I think Irunga mentioned this before, it's quite complex, and there are different levels of it. It's everywhere. And if we do address it in its entirety, then it might be helpful to break it up. At the national level, the citizen of Kenya, the citizen of Zimbabwe, Angola, will be concerned with corruption as it affects them and as it affects their daily life. So the services that do not reach this citizen because of corruption are the immediate effect of corruption that they are facing. And at that level, it has very little to do with anything external to that country. It is the service delivery mechanism of the government of the day to help the citizen to have a better life free of corruption. And that ideally is the responsibility of the state. The state may have some challenges with regard to sources, but that's the responsibility.
We'll continue the conversation. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We have more of our discussion in just a moment.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Well, a reminder that we appreciate the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, and you may also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the significance of U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's four-nation visit to Africa. Mrs. Trump is promoting child well-being during her stops in Ghana, Kenya, Malawi, and Egypt. The U.S. First Lady visits Africa on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Well, today we are talking about the war on corruption in Africa. Our guests are Arikana Chombori Kwao, Ambassador of the African Union to the United States. Joining us live via Skype from Berlin, Germany, is Paul Banoba, Africa Regional Advisor, Transparency International. And from Surrey, Britain, Irungo Houghton, Executive Director, Amnesty International, Kenya. And before we went to the break, we're talking about this perception that more is going out, and therefore we should focus a little more on what is being stolen. Irungo, a question I'd asked Paul was, do you get the sense that actually African countries, especially this particular year when they have a theme of winning the fight against corruption, are doing certain things in a very practical way to fight against corruption in a real way that we can see results come next year, come 2-3 years from now?
So I think the ambassador is correct in a sense that we do need to keep an eye on the global corruption that keeps Africa underdeveloped and essentially hemorrhaging its resources to Europe, North America, China, and other countries. So there is no single narrative on corruption. But if we turned a little bit to the question of this year of anti-corruption, I guess for me the question I would ask is, the African Union has in many cases issued statements on illegal or unconstitutional seizures of power. They've issued statements on conflict, internal conflict or conflict between states. I have yet to see a powerful comment on either the corruption that we saw in South Africa with regards to Zumagate or the experience of Dos Santos in Angola or Nguema or Nguesso or all these cases of corruption that are littered across our international newspapers. And I think for me, the challenge that I would push back to the African Union is what would make this a uniquely different year? Voluntary reporting by African governments will not do this. We know this already. The APRM, the African peer review mechanism, will not generate the conditions for a corrupt-free Africa. So the question is really this: at what point will the African Union either begin to censure its leaders within the continent publicly so that citizens feel the courage on this question,
Irongo,
or when will they challenge them internationally?
Irongo, who will censure who? Who's going to point?
That's my question, essentially, is that until the African Union as a body, whether it be the African Union Commission or the Permanent Representatives Committee or the Executive Council, until we start to see some strong statements in opposition to the corruption we're seeing in our continents, then the African Union will find itself caught up in essentially a non-effective and ineffective approach to corruption, and it will leave that struggle, that fight, to citizens and anti-corruption organizations in the continent, but not driven by the states.
Ambassador Chiombori, I hope I won't grow very old before I stop hearing what many Africans say, is that they consider the Africa Union as a boys' club, and lately there is a girl, some girls in there, that is toothless, that is ineffective, that is very good at issuing slogans, but never really acting on it, because the boys' club, when it comes together, none of them has the audacity to look at the other one in the face and say, my friend, you're doing wrong. This is not how you should be running your country, because everybody feels like they're equal and you have no business interfering in what I'm doing in my country. Can this change, or is this a misguided perception we have?
It's a misguided perception. At one point, it was correct. But I can honestly tell you that this is a new African Union. We can't keep painting Africa with the same old brush. You see, this narrative is designed to continue to keep Africa down. Are we guys just going to get in the lane that assumes Africa is never going to change? The leadership is changing.
Yeah, but the leaders of countries that look totally messed up, when they meet together, the African Union, they're all just hugging each other, and they look like they're happy to be together, to hang out, and they leave and go back to their countries, and we see the same things continuing. So really, is there anybody at the continental level who can speak very loudly and clearly and say what's happening in Uganda is not right, or what is happening, as Irongo said, say, whether it's in South Africa? We've not had any African leader speaking. I mean, there are a few cases. The president of Botswana at some point said something. But generally, it looks like the African leaders have so much respect and love for each other that they do not really dare to criticize each other.
That's a facade, I can tell you that. I have been in meetings where they have really been going at each other. Mm-hmm. They are not going to air their dirty linen. But I can honestly tell you, when they are together, yes, what you see on the outside, they are brothers. And we want them to be brothers. But I have seen them in action. They are policing each other. I want people to know that it is a new day in Africa. It is a new day at the African Union. Mm-hmm. I have listened to President Kagame chairing the African Union Commission and the African heads of states. It is a new day.
But are there instruments that can enforce some of the aspirations of the African Union, even with the best intentions?
We have Agenda 2063, which is, of course, it is broad. But keep in mind, the African Union, as an entity, we have no sovereignty. At the end of the day, after the conversations take place at the African Union and the heads of states commit to doing something, we expect them to go back and enforce. The conversations, the world must know, it is a new Africa. We cannot continue to just put Africa down and not allow these heads of states, give them a chance to do the right thing. There are many already that are doing very well by their people. But to continue to just beating the same drumbeat as if nothing is going to change. Things are changing. That's why I'm here. I am telling you that things are changing at the African Union.
And you know, people are happy when things change because they will see the difference in their personal lives. They will see things improving in terms of security in their own countries. Right. But if I go back to Berlin, Paul, In terms of the things that are probably happening right, I mean, we've mentioned in your reports, countries like Cape Verde, Seychelles, Rwanda, they're doing well. What is it that sets them apart? Why has there been a lot of improvement in how they deal with some of those issues?
Thanks, Vincent. So at the national level, the things that Irunga mentioned before still remain very valid. Institutions, having the right institutions and empowering those institutions, giving them the mandate, the capacity to do their work, and also having the right laws in place, and having a national framework that is actually solid and robust and running as a system. So that is seen in a number of the countries where the countries you're listing that are doing quite well. And if you have conversations with a number of Africans, they will also add political will. They'll say there is political will to address this issue in this country, and we may or may not see this in another country. Because the truth is that there are countries with all these things, but they're still not working. They have the institutions in place, they'll have the laws in place, and you'll name it, everything that we list as the elements of a national integrity system that should work are in place, but you still have very high levels of corruption. And then the question is, why? So that's when the political will come up as a question.
And of course, you were talking about just, it's almost like a token. Ambassador Chombori, of course, says we shouldn't brush the continent, paint it with one brush. But we know we're talking about 54 countries, but just a few of them are seemingly doing well. If I may turn to Irungu in Britain, Kenya lately has come out as a country that is really determined to fight corruption. President Uhuru Kenyatta has said he will not leave any stone unturned until corruption is eliminated. Irungu, in Britain, please, if we may put this to you, how encouraged are you by what's happening in Kenya, and to what extent do you feel that Kenya's institutions are strong enough to deal with the powerful men who have been known to plunder the economy of Kenya?
So I've been very encouraged by the efforts recently, at least in the last 3 months, to do lifestyle audits across all our public offices, to arrest and prosecute fairly senior officers within our parastatals and within our ministries. There are, of course, a number of allegations being made about more senior government officials, and I would hope that this war against corruption would not be used politically to shield certain people and to target others, but really would be a genuine approach to cleansing the public offices that are so important for our country. So I think that's the first thing. I think what is missing a little bit, not just in Kenya, but in other places, that I think the allure or the attraction of corruption has become so powerful. To give you one example, in Kenya, there was a opinion poll that was done that demonstrated that about 70% of young Kenyans would commit a corrupt act if they could be immunized from prosecution. And I think what we need to do now is we need to think a little bit about how do we build the muscle of ethics and integrity within our countries. And there are many things that could be done. Some countries have started doing this already. New ideas, like, for example, giving incentives for people who file their taxes early that essentially provide support to the communities that whistleblow. There are many ways in which we can create an incentive because at the moment there is really no incentive in people taking action on corruption. There is simply risk and a sense that you may be persecuted, and that needs to change.
Yeah, now talk about prosecution. In fact, in a recent interview with VOA, Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo talked about his government's efforts to combat corruption and corrupt officials. Let's listen to this.
Several trials are going on, efforts to delay those trials by means or the other, the trial against the former chief executive of Cocoa Board, who was very much a central feature of the, what the allegations that had gone on before, it's on. There are others that have also been started. But once they leave the hands of the executive, once the Attorney General lays the complaint before the courts, it is a matter for the courts. It is no longer a matter for the executive. That's the system we've chosen. In a system that for myself, I think is a good system. Yes, because we don't want one person to be judge and jury. No, you lay your complaint, make the allegation, and let other people investigate it to see whether there's any weight in
due process.
And due process.
Yes, and so there's some effort, say, in Ghana. They say they're taking care of some of the officials. But all this, you find, is from previous regimes. So there's hope that perhaps new leadership in some countries, like we've seen in Angola, is taking care of, trying to clean up the mess from the past. That's what you're saying in Sierra Leone.
That's precisely what I'm trying to tell you,
yeah.
That there is a lot that is being done.
Yeah.
And I'm here to let the world know that we're not just sitting back and allowing the past to continue.
So but even in those countries, if you do not entrench institutions that can live on and actually exist even beyond the current leaders, you can always slide back or the gains can be lost after some time.
Again, you're making an assumption that the current leaders are not addressing that. Why?
Well, we'll be happy if we get evidence that
that
is happening.
Do you see Nana Addo not addressing that?
Well, we want to see that continuing, and
I'm telling you that it is happening.
Yeah.
And rather than just to sit back and think it's business as usual, I am telling you it is not business as usual. You cannot honestly look at President Addo and expect him to not put everything that needs to be put in place. You're making an assumption that the African leaders don't know what they're doing.
No, we're asking the question so we can get the response. So you're
and
answering
this is
that.
The response I'm giving you.
You're saying
you,
it's happening.
That the African leaders,
yes.
Through the leadership of my chairman, Musa Faki Mahamat, the president of the African Union, President Kagame, they're on it.
They're developing institutions that will
absolutely
serve the purpose for now, but into the future.
Into the future, and they have zero tolerance, and they are speaking to each other and with each other as to way forward for the African continent, and corruption is right at the core of it all. What we are asking is for those who are coming from outside, bringing corruption to Africa, that they too begin to think again about their activities within Africa that are also going to make it at a larger scale. You see, corruption has various layers.
Yeah, President Kenyatta mentioned that. Are there more African, or should we see more African leaders also actually raising concern about those who are bringing corruption into the country?
That needs to be the loudest voice.
Yes.
And so yet those have no voice at all. Nobody's talking about them.
But the presidents need to mention that. The African leaders need to say, hey, we don't want your corruption. We don't want you to continue in, stealing our property, our wealth, and also introducing corruption in our countries. Here's another question.
While you're still on that point, these multinationals that are corrupting Africa, that are bringing corruption into Africa, they're also destabilizing the political political systems within various countries.
Yeah.
So you also have to realize that while the leaders are trying to speak up, they have to be aware of the bigger forces from outside that, and they're risking being destabilized. It's a complicated situation that people really need to understand, that the way Africa was set up during the Berlin Conference, it is exactly why we are where we are today. We are economies that can easily be destabilized should the head of state begin to threaten Satan.
We are now, as a continent, at least over
55
years old.
AU.
So we are mature. We've grown up. We
no,
need
we
to
are
start
not.
Fixing
How
a few things.
How can we be mature when we are lightweights being made to fight with heavyweights every day? No, we are not.
Okay.
No, don't call us mature when we are still Equatorial Guinea, we are still Burundi, we are still Rwanda, little economies that are meant to stand side by side with big economies like China, like the US.
Paul,
it's
in
not
Berlin,
a fair world.
Yeah, Paul in Berlin. Do you feel that Africa is disadvantaged because of its, of course, inferior economic power? And or the fact that colonialism did a lot of damage to the continent?
Two answers to that, Vincent. The first is that I think think there's been a number of years that we've debated this question, are we talking about a historical issue, and how does that historical issue continue to disadvantage us today? And it can creep into the corruption angle, but the question that I would have is that when people come in from outside, because we're talking about corruption coming in from outside, when they do come in from outside and they find these 55 different entities, the difference between what they'll find in some of the countries that you listed that are doing better with the corruption question is that they will find robust institutions that have been built during that time. We've had around about the same time to build institutions. They'll find institutions that can handle the situation a bit better than others. They'll find institutions that will address the investor in a way that is not interfered with by, let's say, the executive, and they will handle that better. So that's the difference between these two institutions. And I'll stop there.
Yeah, and Irungu, in terms of this disadvantage, it is a continent where just one single country, China, can actually come and literally take over. Right now, in some African countries, it looks like they have already been colonized by China. Does Africa stand a chance of fixing some of its problems if there is so much external interference by countries like China, the Europeans, and even, you know, any other Western country?
Africa always has had a chance. Africa is, a proud and dignified continent that has hundreds of years of resistance to colonization, to imperialism, to neocolonialism, and I think Africa will prevail. That would be my first point. But let me just respond a little bit to this issue about, that our history incapacitates us from being able to take action on corruption. I think this crutch needs to be thrown away by our governments. As Ambassador was speaking, I could remember, the first Prime Minister of Nigeria, Tafawa Balewa, who made the same point back in 1961. It is now 2018. We cannot stay behind on this issue without taking corruption head on. And I think looking at the issue of livestock, we know how to fight corruption in our continent. It's not difficult. Lifestyle auditing, was needed, back in the Bible when Jacob tricked Esau out of his birthright. It was needed when, the East African chiefs were tricked out of land by the Imperial British East Africa Company back in the 1890s. We know how to fight corruption. And if we don't, we just need to remember the late Thomas Sankara, who not only led a people against corruption, but he created a country that was named after integrity. And I think the only simple thing we need to say to our leaders and to the partners like the Chinese and the Americans and the British is that we must really demand of our leaders that we did not send you to public office to do business with our state. We sent you there to deliver services, and we sent you there to protect our public resources. And if you cannot do that, you should step aside and allow the billion others on our continent to step up.
Yes. Ambassador Chiombori, does it disturb you and even other African leaders that the quickest way to become a millionaire in so many of the African countries is getting into politics, becoming a member of parliament, join the cabinet, become a governor? And it's become a fact. Many young people aspire to that. What does that mean?
If that is happening in Africa, it's no different from anywhere else in the world. That's just the nature of human beings. Again, I disagree with you when you try to make an issue a uniquely African issue. It is happening in other parts of the world. It is wrong when we see it happen. We must speak to it, but just don't isolate it and make it an African issue. Again, going back to the
but
African
But how about saying in Africa we don't want to tolerate this rather than making it almost an excuse because it happens elsewhere?
The fact
that a person joins politics today, is into the system, and within no time is a multimillionaire because they've stolen public funds. Should we accept that?
No, we should not. As Africans, we should not accept it. As any other
whether
country,
it happens
human
anywhere
beings,
the world.
Wherever it happens, we should not accept it. Yeah. Which is why, again, the heads of states collectively agreed on this year being the year that it is, because they realize that there are issues in our African village. And that issue of corruption, we need to address it. But we also realize that while we are trying to address the issues of corruption within our continent, we have the bigger 10,000-pound gorilla in the room, which is the corruption from outside.
Which can be fought like colonialism was fought by...
Well, you tell me why, my brother, if you say it can be fought, why are we still dealing with the pact for the continuation of colonization? Why are Francophone African countries still paying colonial debt, if it is that simple?
And that's why they should talk about it more. But
that's
here's
the
my question.
That's the 10,000-pound
There should be a lot
gorilla.
Of talk around that.
We must talk about it, but the powers against us makes it impossible. Because ideally, what should outrage us as Africans is to say, why is it that 1958, when they were made to sign that pact, to this day that pact is still in place? The world should be outraged by that.
I want to ask a question that I'll take around very quickly in very few words. Do we also suffer the problem of being complacent kind of being satisfied with very little progress?
Well, that's a bigger, it's a deeper issue. When you look at the Berlin conference, one other thing that was done after the Berlin conference is putting in place a system to make the Africans believe that everything African was bad and everything European was better. We suffer from the legacy of colonialism. We automatically feel inferior when faced with our Caucasian brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. That is something that we as individuals need to deal with. Mm-hmm. It goes to how we are going to make decisions about Africa when we are faced with them. So yes, in some cases, we have not been good negotiators for Africa. We need to do better. We need to wake up as Africans and realize that we are just as good as anybody else. And when we come to negotiating for Africa and getting rid of those boundaries, the issues you're talking to, you're right. We should have addressed them. 55 years later since OAU, there are issues our Pan-African fathers spoke about in 1963 that we are yet to address. We are yet to attain that perfect African Union. Yeah. Our solution to truly removing corruption out of Africa is when Africa speaks with one voice as one continent, and we are there.
Okay, let me try to split 1 minute between this gentleman. Paul, what's your last word?
So we are 3/4 way through the year against corruption, the African year against corruption as declared by the African Union. And you don't get the sense that we've deployed everything that we could for 2018, for this big declaration.
Okay.
So with regard to winning this fight against corruption, there is more that could be deployed.
Okay.
We've heard of reports coming in. It would be good
to get this. Let's take it wrong. Less than 30 seconds.
So I think for me, the Mobutu and Bokassa were not my relatives. Sankara and, Samora Machel were my relatives. I think we have to be clear which side of history are African leaders on at this particular point. And I think this will play out in the course of this year and beyond. But I think the key point that we need to say is that, Africans must demand of our appointed and elected leaders to live within their salaries or to step down and give us the opportunity to elect new leaders that can be able to take this action.
Thank you. On that note, thanks to our guest, Ambassador Rikana Chombori-Kwao, Ambassador of the African Union to the United States. Paul Banoba, Africa Regional Advisor, Transparency International, and Irungu Houghton, Executive Director, Amnesty International, Kenya. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Butty. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa, and have a great evening.